We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You know that voice? He's Cubs skipper Joe Maddon. My guess would be he'll take the Cubs roster over the Astros roster, no matter what Dallas Keuchel believes. That Joe Maddon talking about the tools that they have, and also threw in there that they catch the ball when they're doing what they did during the World Series year. They had great defense as well.
I think the art critic in Joe would say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So when
very
you look
well
at the rosters, he probably would love the Cubs. Of course he would, just as Dallas Keuchel would love the Astros.
And we asked you what you thought. 312-644-6767 is the number. You want to jump in, join the conversation? Matt's in Oak Park. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, good morning, guys. I won't pretend to be objective, but I would, I would say the Astros have a higher ceiling. I think they could be more spectacular if they play up to their potential, but I'll take the Cubs. I think they'll be more consistent, and I don't know, baseball's a funny thing. I mean, I'm obviously not objective, but I would take the Cubs.
Thanks, Matt.
Based on the depth, probably, I guess,
yeah.
Because when you do go position by position, as Joe mentioned.
And you're just an objective observer. I mean, look, there's what, at least three teams by Vegas odds that have a better chance to get to the World Series. Now, that doesn't necessarily just mean the talent on the team. It's what division you're in, you know, the path you have to get to. So you have the Astros 7-1, Dodgers 8-1, Yankees 9-1. You can expand the conversation, the question, how many teams would you take? How many other teams' roster would you take over the Chicago Cubs?
Nobody in the National League. I think that when you got Hugh Darvish, that when you look at the National League rosters, who else compares? The Nationals? The Dodgers? Well, the Dodgers lost Brandon Morrow, and they lost Hugh Darvish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would take their roster over the Cubs. They have a lot of great young talent. They are the defending National League champions. But I still would take the Cubs based on their offseason. In the American League, it's the Astros in terms of the roster depth and quality. And so then you're comparing those two. And I think that you can compare those two every day for the next 162 days or games, and you'd get a different answer. That'd be easy to justify. Even
Stanton going to the Yankees. And by the way, just see where Aaron Judge wouldn't. He kind of went down the road that the home run derby caused him to have the second half that he had. But when asked specifically if he's blaming the home run derby on his shoulder issue, he said, I'm not going to say that, or I'm not going to talk about that. But it sure sounds like that he's no longer interested in doing the home run derby.
I think there probably was more in play than just a home run derby with Judge last year. It's inevitable. The Yankees, you have to put them in there, too. They have the flashiest roster. Do they have the deepest and the best roster? I don't know about that. I mean, because then you get in, pitching is not, you know, their pitching staff is not as, doesn't make you go wow as much as their everyday lineup.
Let's check in with Cal. He's on the road. Morning, Cal.
Hey, Cal.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good. Great. How are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to mention a little bit about the Cubs pitching staff chemistry. You go on with Lester's intensity and Hendricks, the tactician he is. I believe the whirling Darvish is really set to have a heck of a year. I really like how this is looking, gentlemen.
It sounds like a T-shirt, Cal.
I have faith in you.
You better get that trademark before Joe gets it, all right? The whirling Darvish.
That's a painting waiting to be framed.
You guys have a great day and a great show. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Cal. Thanks,
all right, Cal.
Thanks, there, whirling Darvish. Get some. Get those. Did you rain the Mona Lisa?
I don't know if everybody's faith in Hugh Darvish is deep, but I think it probably is warranted, though. Do you think that he will be somebody that Cubs fans embrace immediately?
I think he will be someone Cubs fans embrace once he starts speaking English. I think that's part of the reason that Jose Abreu has been the quiet slugger star that he's been on the South Side. And Jose has said it. He said he wanted to be more of a leader in the clubhouse over the last 2-3 years, but felt like the language barrier didn't, you know, prevent him from saying things that needed to be said necessarily, because all of a sudden he's got to have the interpreter there, you know, telling, waking the team up for him. It just doesn't.
But if he's throwing shutouts, it doesn't matter if he's speaking English.
I think to get the full, you know, for Cub Nation to absolutely embrace him,
the stardom,
yeah,
the full stardom treatment, yeah.
I just believe that, and he said, you know, apparently he's very comfortable speaking English with his teammates. We talked about that the other day. He's talked about it. He has talked to Theo and Jed throughout a 3 or 4 hour meeting down in Texas. Without, he made a point of saying, I don't want to use an interpreter. I want to talk to these guys. So once he, and he says he's getting close to being comfortable. Once he does that and starts answering post-game questions on his own, you get, just get more of the personality. I mean, we had this, it was a silly little thing, but, you know, Paul Sullivan, our buddy and your colleague at the Tribune, said he thought it was sarcasm when Yu Darvish said he dropped the 15 pounds because of the, what happened in the World Series. Like, you know, everyone else thought it was cause and effect, that no, in fact, that's what he changed out of the World Series. It wasn't tipping pitches. He had too many, he had 15 LBS on them that he could lose. So I think once you, look, if he goes out there and is on pace to win a Cy Young, he'll get.
Well, he's got the personality. There's no question about it. And he's a guy who's used to being treated like a star, because he came to the majors after experiencing that kind of stardom in Japan. And I think when you look at his capability to handle the attention and the daily scrutiny, the regular scrutiny every time he pitches, yeah, you hope to see some of that. You hope he's not shielded by, you know, that layer, the extra layer of having an interpreter. I do agree with you with Jose Abreu. He is a star in Major League Baseball, but he's still very much, I don't want to say a secret on the South Side.
Yeah,
but it has been limited his reach, in part because of that barrier. And I think that's understandable, but it's also just a reality that you can't ignore.
Let's check in with LT. He's got an interesting point. LT.
Hey, LT.
Morning, LT.
What's going on, fellas?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I think in order to truly answer that question about comparing the rosters, you have to compare not this Cubs roster. You got to compare the roster after the year they won the championship. When you lose Chapman, Astros definitely got a better roster.
Well, that's not the roster he was talking about, though. He was talking about, you know, they're better than, he said, we're not the Cubs. I firmly believe we have better players.
But I like LT's argument.
But they were talking about the hangover, though.
Yeah,
so the Cubs' hangover was the year after the championship. His roster after their championship is better than the Cubs' roster after their championship.
But David's right. Keiko went to this year, like, we have, you know, moving forward, we have better players. But I'm with you, LT. Yeah. The argument should start with, you know, with the Jake Arrieta, Cy Young Cubs, you know, with the full
that's
compliment.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
They're not the Cubs. They didn't lose their closer.
Chapman wasn't here for the hangover, right? I mean, Chapman was dealing with being abused by Joe Maddon, if you believe what he said. He, you know, he had moved on and moved back to New York, so he didn't, you know, he wasn't part of the equation that Dallas
Fair enough,
Keuchel's
but
being.
None of the Cubs' issues last year had anything to do with their closer.
No. No, Wade
had anything to do
good.
With their slow start was unrelated to their late inning bullpen.
It was
failures.
The defense wasn't as good. The rotation wasn't
starting
as good.
Pitching
the
took
offense,
a while.
The top of the lineup wasn't doing anything. Yeah. I mean, Chris Bryant's first 13 home runs, I think, were solo shots, right?
Well, nobody was getting on base for him. And Joe Maddon had the
that goes unsaid.
The failed experiment of putting Kyle Schwarber at the leadoff spot. That set the tone for a lot of things that went wrong in the way the Cubs started the season slow, I think. Is that fair to say?
And he doesn't believe it for a second.
Well, I know he doesn't believe it. He's never going to acknowledge that. But it happened.
How much have we seen Schwarber lead off this spring?
Well, Ian Happ is there.
I know, but
to stay.
But I mean, you know, wasn't he going to be one of the, you know, he was going to be in the mix, not as he wasn't
I'm
the
glad
the guy.
He hasn't gotten there yet.
Right.
I'm glad that he has been slow to try that again, because
it will do a disservice to Kyle Schwarber, right? You don't need to do. He needs to have to be put in the best position possible to have a full season of looking like the player he was 2 years ago, and not
now. His weight loss wasn't sarcasm, was it?
No, okay. That was direct, that was directed by Theo and Jed, I do believe. I believe that was a meeting of the minds and said, you know,
make sure I got everything straight here.
This segment of the show brought to us by O'Reilly Auto Parts, 312-644-6767. Get back to your calls. You got Molly and Haley, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's Joe Madden answering questions about the World Series hangover that the team finally got around to basically admitting that they went through. I think initially, David Hoff, memory serves, they dismissed that idea.
Out of hand.
I don't know if it was May or June. They pretty much said, yeah, maybe there's something to this. Maybe
it was real.
Yeah, maybe we're not talking about run differential baseball and historic. You know,
460 games qualified as a fog, I think. Mm-hmm. Definitely a fog. A lot of... You spent the first 60 games kind of reminiscing about the World Series. And there was, but I think the Cubs will deal with that in a way, had to deal with that in a way that maybe the Astros won't because of what it meant.
And the whole world isn't watching.
Yeah. It was on a, it didn't mean any less to the Astros.
No.
We're not suggesting that, but I think it definitely had, you know, a smaller impact.
It might not have resonated in San Antonio.
World.
I mean, you know. You know, once the parade was done, the you know Austin probably went back to eating barbecue.
That was
and
it.
Worrying about Texas football. I you know, we'll find out. But Dallas Keuchel's got thoughts. 312-644-6767. Dennis is in Maple Park. Morning, Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Brian. Wanted to talk about. I really believe what everybody seems to be saying. Their rosters are fairly equal. And without turning this into a referendum on Joe Madden, I'd like to talk here what you have to say about the managers. They have a little bit to say in what goes on with their teams.
That's interesting. You know, as we and thanks for the call, Dennis. We had a texter who wanted to expand that beyond. He said, I will give you the Astros roster is better than the Cubs player for player, but talk about the organization. And that's a different conversation. And as much as we beat up on Joe and his T-shirts and the back in the day of the petting zoo and now the curator of art, he changed. I mean, whatever magic he worked with the young guys connecting with that young group, leading them and taking them on the theme trips and everything else, lightening the load and telling them not to take batting practice and have an American Legion week and everything else. You know, you can roll your eyes at it now, and I think a lot of us do because it's been there, done that.
He's been here for a while.
Right. But he changed. Theo and Jets certainly changed the culture of the entire organization. I think when they got here and tore this thing down to the bare bones of the organization, they probably thought, wow, it's worse than we thought when it got to the scouting department. And
but that was the big move.
Right.
That's the move that precipitated everything else that happened.
The heavy lifting. But, I mean, I don't even think they knew what they were walking into until they got there and start ripping the place apart. And, oh, boy, rebuilding this is going to take some time. And they did it probably sooner than they anticipated, although Theo already said the smartest thing they did was not put a timeline on it. So, you know, Joe, there is no Game 8 Madden. You know, as Molly always says, he won the World Series. Can you imagine if he lost? I mean, there would be books written about he would now be on the list of Cubs managers who were – you know.
All true, all valid, all understandable. And I think we do like to have Joe Madden around because he's polarizing in a way that he's compelling every single day. And
sure.
Much like Ozzie Guillen was. And we do get tired of his act a little bit. And we make fun of it. And it's easy to mock at times. But if you had a manager draft tomorrow and you had to pick between A.J. Hinch and Joe Madden, who are you picking?
Yep.
Who you picking? And that's no disrespect to A.J. Hinch.
How many? And,
but you're picking Joe Madden, right? How many managers in Major League Baseball would you pick?
How many GMs? How many GMs in Major League Baseball would take look at the two and say, which one do I want?
That's the question.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at how many guys are in that echelon that he is at, it's a short list. And I don't think that when you bring managers into the equation as we were asked to do. That gives the Astros the edge? Not at all.
No.
I think it probably favors the Cubs.
No, I think that's where Dennis was going.
Yeah.
You know,
Dennis is right.
He conceded the roster. And I'll even expand it to the Blackhawks. And when people, as soon as we start talking about the Hawks and where it all went wrong and who's to blame and is there blame to parcel out, immediately Q's got to go. We get the tech zone. And it's 50-50. Stan Bowman and all these contracts, you know, mistake after mistake, he's got to go. if you put together that list, the imaginary list we're doing here between Joe Maddon and A.J. Hinch, if you put a list together on coaches that are ranking higher right now than Joel Quenneville, and then do the same for the GM list with Stan Bowman, you're good. I don't know how many names you have in front of
Very different
list. The Hall of Fame queue there is there might Mike Babcock. I mean,
maybe.
There might be one or two guys
maybe.
You could make an argument, or better, the hockey people would make an argument for.
Oh, I have Hawks thoughts. We can get to those a little bit later.
But I mean,
it's a good point though.
The 500 player poll that just came out. The coach the most wanted the players most wanted to play for Joel Quenneville. Now, and he said, you know, in Q style, I must be getting soft. But, you know, that guys around the league said, yeah, I'd like to follow
respect.
That guy. Yeah.
And as much as we sort of mock some of the things that Joe Maddon does and the art and the explanations and all of the stuff in the way he handles pitchers sometimes.
As long as it resonates in that clubhouse or doesn't get the
it's
eye roll.
Respect.
Yeah.
As long as he still gets respect, that's all that matters. And it's a results-oriented business, as we always hear. But he still is delivering results. So,
David, I would guess if you polled 500 Major League Baseball players, Joe Maddon would be pretty high, if not number one, on the list of managers that they want to play for.
Top three.
Yeah.
No lower than three, I would imagine.
Let's check in with our buddy Crowley. Good morning, Crowley.
Hey, Crowley.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
You know, I think the whole Dallas Keuchel thing is really much ado about nothing. You know, if they were asking in context of what happened to the Cubs last year, because they are very similar teams on how they rebuilt and everything. And I think that if you ask the Yankees who has the best roster, what are they going to say? If you ask the Dodgers, what are they going to say? Keuchel's going out there thinking what he thinks, and that's fine. He has to prove it. And I think that the Cubs learned the hard way that the hangover is for real, and I think you guys made a lot of good points, that that was something so historic that there was really no comp that you could put in what that took out of them emotionally and all the interest in the Cubs World Series. It's not fair to compare the two, but the Cubs did make it to the NLCS and were four games away from the World Series. So if that's a hangover, I'll take it.
Yeah, thanks, Crowley. And that was my point earlier on in the show that, you know, Dallas, when you keep knocking on the door, and that was Theo's goal when he first got here and announced, you know, sustained success means you have an opportunity each and every year to at least be in the conversation. When you can get to the championship round in your league in consecutive years and actually win a World Series in that run too, then you've really established something as an organization. You know, but I mean, look, Dallas Keuchel, you know, I guess the headline would have been if, you know, of course the Cubs have a better roster than
that
we
would have been news.
But he dismissed
when a player identifies the other team as being better, that's the big headline.
But he dismissed it like, you know, we're better than the Cubs. You know,
we're
what
not
are you talking
about?
Yeah, I mean, okay. We'll find out. Time will tell. 312-644-6767. Speaking of time, it's time to check in with Joe. Scoreboard update.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you, Joe. Selection Sunday, 48 hours away, and we'll check in with Mike DeCourcy, our buddy from the Sporting News, talk all things NCAA hoops, and we'll do that in just a few on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And Mike DeCourcy, you see him on the Big Ten Network, you read him in the Sporting News, and you hear him right here on The Score. Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, Mike.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing well. I'd like to tell you I'm doing great, but I think Marquette's, my alma mater's NCAA long shot hopes died with their defense against Villanova yesterday. But, you know, NIT, here we come. Here at the conference tournaments, it is weird for me to not be watching Big Ten conference basketball tournament this week, even though it wrapped up with about as well as it could have been hoped last weekend with Michigan State, Michigan in particular. The all the concerns about not being energized in that building or interested, it all went the way of sold out crowds and people off the charts happy about it.
It was a terrific experience. It really was. The Garden was alive on Friday when Rutgers was there. The Garden was packed on Saturday for the semifinals. Honestly, even the 12 versus 13 game, Illinois Iowa, that doubleheader that night, the crowd was very good. I mean, there was no one in the upper deck, but I mean, if you've watched last couple days in St. Louis or Vegas or wherever, there's
no one's
nobody
in the lower deck.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So it turned out really well, and Now, honestly, the one thing I'll say is that I think that this was probably the best year that you could possibly have done this, because this was not a banner year for the league.
Right.
From five to or six on down, the teams weren't exceptional. And so you really didn't hurt anybody by doing this. If you'd had it in Indianapolis, I mean, maybe there had been a few more Purdue people there. If you'd had it in Chicago, neither Illinois nor Northwestern had great years, so people would have had to travel to get there anyway. It's just a different place. One thing I say is, you invited Penn State a long time ago to get in the league, and you invited Maryland and Rutgers, and then there's a portion of the fan base is saying, yeah, but it's our league. Well, no, now it's theirs too.
Mike, we'll get to Loyola in a second because that's a great story. But last night, Notre Dame goes down to Duke, runs into Marvin Bagley, and boy, did he look dominant. The Irish get Bonzi Wells back. Bonzi Colson, sorry. It's one of these things where they're a good tournament team. They're proven. Where are they on the bubble, and how do you think they stand going into Sunday?
Yeah, that's a tricky deal. I'm not necessarily a fan of giving a team a pass for an injury, even, as one as profound as that. You are who you are. I mean, your record is what it is. I think it's 18-13 now, and there's some good wins on there, but there's a lot of losses and some that aren't great. So I'm not personally a fan of that. I don't think that, in any other sport we say, the Bears lost their starting cornerback for 6 weeks, so we're going to give them a pass on those six games, and they're going to make the playoffs anyway. If they had been able to squeeze out a couple of those close games that they had at home, Louisville and Carolina, those games that they were really right there, then I'd be more in favor of it. But for the most part, they weren't able to. It was really tough, bad luck, but there are bad luck teams all over college basketball. As much as I admire and Bonzi Colson, as wonderful as Mike is to deal with, he's as good as anybody. He's just such a great guy. But, I can't make, my decision on the fact he's a great guy. You have to do it on what's fair to everybody.
Well, you look at the four Big Ten teams heading to the tournament, it looks like Michigan State still will be a two seed from everything that I've seen to this point. Are they necessarily the de facto team that's going to be the last Big Ten team standing, or do you buy Purdue stock at this point, or even Michigan playing its best basketball?
Yeah, I think Michigan State has the most potential to be that, but they've never really quite found the whole package. Jaren Jackson gets in foul trouble too much, and Miles Bridges, they don't always put him in the best possible position for their offense to work. And I don't mean by playing position. I mean what you do with him within the lineup. Toward the end of the Michigan game, they started to put him in the low post, and he was dynamic. I mean, he was devastating. It was almost the first time I'd seen it all year. I think that sometimes they need to be a little bit more flexible in the things they do. And perhaps they saw something in that moment, those moments, and then they'll go back, and now that they have all this time to work on it, they'll say, okay, we get an opportunity for a good matchup for Miles because we're playing him as a small forward, and he's guarded by a guy who's 6'3 or 6'4. Let's clear out the post, and let's get him down there and let him go to work.
Loyola's a big story here in Chicago, Mike. It's a great tale. Porter Moser, the program, taking to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 33 years. A lot of enthusiasm, a lot of interest. What's the ceiling for Loyola, and what do you expect in terms of seeding for them on Sunday?
Your DeCourcy metrics, you had that team going to make do some damage in the tournament if they even got in a large bid, right? Because for years you've been looking at those 28-win teams.
Yeah, I call it the 801 club. So you win more than 80% of your games, and they certainly belong in that. It doesn't mean you automatically win, but you're more likely to win than a lot of double-digit seeds. If you compare their record, the double-digit seeds record for teams that are in the 801 club to teams that are traditionally, like from a power conference, that, 6 or 7 games above 500, the 801 club teams always outperform those sorts of teams. they know how to win. And certainly Loyola has shown that they know how to win basketball games. You don't put together 28-5. And, you know, oh, it's the schedule. Look, you have to go on the road in the Valley, I guess, 9 times a year. You have to play neutral games in Arch Madness. At some point, you know, who you play matters less than where you play. That's why the quadrants that the NCAA set up is where basically a home win against a top 25 team win is similar to a road win against a top 75 team. It's really hard to win on the road. Statistically, over time, that's what's borne out. That's why those numbers are set where they are. So they did that time and again. They have a great balance. They play together beautifully. You go into a game like that where so much pressure is on last Sunday, where if they don't win the automatic bid, they may not get in. And we saw that a year ago with Illinois State. So that's the most pressure game you can have, and they just blew right through it.
Mike, what'd you make of the Mark Smith leaving Illinois in the context of Tubby Smith got a lot of blowback for coming out and saying that, you know, the players should be restricted and there should be some penalty to leave a program and transfer. And people immediately pointed to Tubby, you know, leaving programs either voluntarily to better his situation or because, you know, he was being nudged out. But Mark Smith, I mean, it's not a good look for Brad Underwood that, you know, compared this kid to Jason Kidd last fall. And obviously the numbers were, 5-6 points average, and he was going to lose his starting job. And, you know, Illinois releases him, doesn't make him sit out a year so he can go wherever. What'd you make that whole situation, and does that damage the Illinois program necessarily?
Oh, not necessarily. You know, he did not have a great freshman year, and it was pretty apparent that he was going to part. I'd say probably a month left, people knew that he was probably going to go. I wish that players would give themselves more time to flourish, but I don't think that Tubby was really being fair there. I mean, there are a lot of different types of transfers. There are a lot of reasons why guys transfer. They get to a program and find out that their style of basketball doesn't mesh with the coach. They get to the program and they find out their personality doesn't mesh with the coach. Maybe this is not the case for Mark, but in other cases, they go to a program like the kid that's point guard at Cincinnati now. He went to Sacred Heart when he was a freshman, averaged 20 points a game, and thought, you know, I can do better than this. What, you know, would somebody out there who's at a higher level want me? And they did. So there's a lot of different reasons to transfer. And, you know, does quitting come into it sometimes? Sure. But I don't think it's fair to brush them all in that direction. And, you know, sometimes you wish a kid would stick it out because you know that in a lot of circumstances it works out. The young player who decides that if they put more time in or more work in, that they can do better. But at the same time, we've seen lots of transfers move and flourish. Remember, the person who gets this player, wherever Mark goes next time, I mean, he doesn't have any more options then. I mean, other than graduating and getting out with 1 year left, maybe. Once you've transferred, you've spent your, you know, you've sort of spent your get out of jail free card, so to speak. So you have to really commit to whoever you pick. And so a lot of times it works out really well for that player.
Mike, how damaging was what Northwestern didn't do this year to Chris Collins's program? And do you think they benefited at all from playing in a market that they tend to get overlooked and they were under the radar and the scrutiny wasn't there, because that was the definition of an underachieving season?
Yeah, it was certainly disappointing. There's no question about that. But let's not forget that they're, you know, less than 12 months removed from, you know, the defining season in the history of their program. They have to get some more guys in there. They didn't have enough good players this year. It's as simple as that. I mean, they still had the core four left over from last year, but they weren't able to complement that. Now, some of that was Aaron Falzone being not quite 100% coming off his injury. They were not able to get out of him what they hoped that they would. But the other part of it was not having enough good players. And they can't miss on guys as often as they did. they needed more guys. And I think the other element that's easily overlooked is how difficult it is to do the new home court thing, to have to be basically a road team for 30 games. They had no home court advantage at all this year. And next year, Welsh Ryan will reopen, presumably as more dazzling than it's ever been, without losing the intimacy that they had during the last decade or so. And so now you get a chance to say to whoever you're recruiting, you're going to play in an on-campus arena that can rank with anybody. And so they have to use that capital wisely in terms of how they recruit the next group.
Gene Lenti-Ponsano preached patience to the DePaul fan base, which is really asking a lot considering the decades of futility here. And she said that it's not turnkey, but they're on the road to they're on the right direction, going the right direction, and close losses and what have you. But she said DePaul fans don't expect junior NBA, but I think they also don't expect a permanent residence in the bottom of the Big East. Are they in the right conference, and should fans be patient with the Dave Lato 2.0 and what they have going there?
Well, now that they've committed to the new arena and all that, there's no better conference out there for them. If you were going to downsize your program, and nobody does this, even programs that have needed to do it for a long time, try to move to, like, say, the Valley or something. No one does that. But now that you've committed to the new building, you can't do that. So you have to do this better. And they're better, but not enough. They certainly made progress to where they were competitive. The question is whether that progress leads to eventually being a winning program and not just a program that doesn't get embarrassed. And that's not an easy step to take, especially in a really good league like the Big East. But the thing about this year was that although DePaul was better, the teams ahead of them were reachable. They were good. And they weren't as reachable, say, as the Big Ten's middle teams were for the bottom of the league, like Iowa or Rutgers. But they were certain. They weren't titans. The teams like Providence and Butler, Marquette, they're good, very good, but they're not like absolutely out of your reach. And that's what I worry about with DePaul a little bit, was that it didn't quite get there. Obviously, next year is an enormous year. If they're not, making steps toward 500 by next year, I don't know how much more patience one can ask.
We'll let you go, Mike. Quickly, though, do you have your top number one seeds set before Selection Sunday?
Yeah, I still think that Xavier, the first two, Villanova and Virginia, are easy. Xavier, I think, needs to do well today and tomorrow. I don't know that they need to win it, but certainly would help them if they were playing Villanova in the title game in the Big East. If they were to lose today, I'm not sure whether they'd hang on. But the problem is, there's nobody to replace them. So they may be solid there. And then Kansas is probably the fourth one. And again, when half of your number one seed line is not quite by default, but just the idea, who's going to take them out? That says a lot about the nature of this season. People are talking about this being a bad bubble. I think the top lines being where they are is much more indicative of the nature of this season being somewhat different.
Interesting and great stuff as always. Mike, we'll talk next week.
Thanks, have a great weekend.
Okay. Thanks, Brian and Dave. Appreciate it.
Mike DeCourcy, you see him on the Big Ten Network and you read him in the sporting news. You got Molly and Hanley on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.